up the radio waves as we begin to burn it up. We all up in your area like landscape, definitely bringing you the power slamming pancakes. It's a mandate that you tune in. It's time to move out so we can move in and recognize that this is no illusion. I'm here to clear the air so that there is no confusion. It all started off in the book of Genesis when Jacob was wrestling with who he thought was his nemesis. And when the man saw he couldn't overpower him, he touched his hip, but he really could have devoured him. And from that point, then we hear a name change, rearrange the game, so now we gotta change. So I'm here to let you know it's time to listen to the Pancake and Power Slam Show. Let's go!
Turn it up, turn it up. It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam Show.
Indeed, indeed, indeed. It is the Pancakes and Power Slam Show. We are here Tuesday nights, like we do every week, to give you the hottest, hot off the press wrestling world news, trivia, the whole nine. We have fun like we do every week. I am Chris Featherstone, your host, and we are here and we're going to have some fun. Like I said last week, like I'm going to do this week, I'm going to let people tweet me quiz questions, trivia questions, chat room, go into chat room, and give me some trivia questions there, or call in live. 347-884-8452. Call in live and just give me some trivia questions there. We're going to have a lot of fun like we do every week, and we'll go on to this week's news. Tweet at Crave Wrestling is the for the trivia questions or any other questions that you have or any other comments that you have as well. This week's news, I wrote an article about this earlier in the week, about JBL issuing an apology to Carlos Colon. He made a reference or Carlos Colon regarding him owing him money, which was very funny. You know, he was in kayfabe, you know, and it's just one of those things that seemed like it was a little bit too it offended Colon. It was kind of stupid to me because, you know, Colon's, he's like 70, so like, you know, or very close to it. And so he should know, you know, that it's just kayfabe and something that small shouldn't have offended him. So, yeah, interesting. CM Punk to possibly retire in 2015 made a little cryptic tweet about it. He was saying something about being home, watching something in 2015. Someone retweeted him, and he said it's not a rumor. He said the guy retweeted him talking about you're spreading rumors, and he said you're not spreading rumors if you you're not spreading rumors if it's true. So Adam Copeland no longer Edge. There was some contractual disputes going on with Adam Copeland, and basically he's pursuing, you know, acting full time now, and that's his career that he's that he is pursuing. And so, because of course, you know, the WWE gets rights if he keeps his name, just like when Dwayne Johnson got rid of The Rock for a while when he was acting. And Adam Copeland's doing the same. He's no longer the Edge gimmick. But, you know, take this for what it's worth. I'm sure that if there's some type of contractual agreement that they have down the line, he'll be Adam Edge Copeland, just like Dwayne The Rock Johnson. So no big deal here in my opinion. And lastly, we'll go on to Hulk Hogan. If you don't know yet, there was a tape roaming around that he said that was 6 years ago. It was a sex tape. Allegedly, he made a sex tape with the wife of Bubba the Love Sponge. According to him, he actually listened to him, his interview on Piers Morgan, and he was saying that it was a bad moment, you know, bad time in his career. Apparently it happened 6 years ago is what he said. It was a rough time in his career, and that happened. Allegedly, Gawker, a website, leaked the site, so leaked the tape, so that is causing him to sue the site for $100 million. That is a very hefty amount, so we'll see how far that goes. If, like I said before, if you have any tweets, tweet at Crave Wrestling. If you have any trivia questions, ask the host today. I have trivia questions for days, but let me see what you have. Tweet at Crave Wrestling. Call in live 347-884-8452. Chat line. Fill up the chat line. The chat room, and give me some questions there. I will do my best. So we'll see. Lay the questions on me. We'll go on to Raw. Big Show cuts a promo and challenges Daniel Bryan. Daniel Bryan backstage with others. He looks at the screen and refuses, but AJ comes up and forces him to compete. And then eventually the Big Show defeats Daniel Bryan. CM Punk cuts a promo. Then Vince McMahon interrupts, and because he was kind of stalling, and he was going to unveil, I guess, some type of poster that had somebody that had his opponent on there, but he was, you know, he cut a heel promo and just kept going. Vince McMahon comes out and said since he didn't, you know, make a decision at that time, he was going to have a contract signing with Vince's Choice later in the show. Looks like that was pretty much a given. Like, you know, so, when it comes to writing the show, I don't know. I mean, it seemed like that was a little bit too predictable as far as already being, you know, written to happen. Like, you know, Vince says, hey, you know, you didn't pick your person, and now I get to pick your person with a grand contract signing at the end. So, you know, it wasn't the best segment to me to open up the show. Well, as far as a big segment's concerned, I guess the opener was Big Show's promo. So, Alberto Del Rio defeats Brodus Clay. Poor Brodus Clay. I mean, this guy. I mean, I had some hopes for him when he came. You know, like I said before, the Funkasaurus gimmick was not very good. But, you know, it kind of worked eventually for me, and now he is one of those mid-card jobbers, and that's very unfortunate. So we'll see. He got squashed by Cesaro a couple weeks ago, and it wasn't necessarily a squash by Alberto Del Rio, but he was on such a he was one of those people that had some potential in him further down the line. So we'll see. We'll see if Brodus Clay continues to go on his unfortunate path of to Jobberville. So we shall see. Next we have CM Punk and Paul Heyman backstage. Punk tells Heyman to go tell McMahon he wants to fight him again tonight. I had a feeling that that wasn't going to happen again. There was some good hype to it, but Vince McMahon wrestling, it just really wasn't going to happen twice in a row. So, looks like I got a question here. Mr. Perfect Russell, who at WrestleMania 5? Believe it was the Blue Blazer, if I'm not mistaken. The Blue Blazer. He wrestled at WrestleMania 5. What was the first match? Another question here in the chat room. What was the first match that had the Hardcore Championship on the line? I might be wrong about this one. I know that the first person coronated as the Hardcore Champion was Mick Foley. And if I'm not mistaken, he went against the Big Boss Man, maybe? I think Foley had something to do with it, but I think it might have been the Big Boss Man against Foley. Let me know if that's true or not. But my guess is Boss Man and Foley. So, Ken Shamrock and Mankind. Oh, man. Mick Foley. Yeah, I know Foley was the first one, but good question. Ken Shamrock and Mankind. So, good deal. Looks like we're having some fun with this trivia already. Blue Blazer was my answer for the Mr. Perfect, so let me know whoever had that question if it is correct or not. So, let's see. Next we have Primetime Players defeating Santino and Zack Ryder. Team Cobro, I mean, looks like they were just kind of thrown together, but I guess it works for the both of them. To me, Santino, the Santino and Vladimir Kozlov team was a little better to me because it was a little bit more odd. Ryder and Santino, I just don't know if I'm feeling this honestly. It seemed like it was a better team with. It seems like Santino and Brodus Clay, when they teamed up them for like a week or two, it seemed like there was a better pairing than Santino and Zack Ryder. I mean, like I've said before, I mean, this time last year he was on a high. I mean, he was at the pinnacle of his career. You know, with the whole U.S. title protests, signing petitions, and I mean, like, that was probably one of the most popular moments of the U.S. title in quite some time. But fortunately, the feud with Eve and Kane really just kind of caused him to go south. So, Team Cobro, not buying it yet. So, then we'll go on to. And then the post-match attack by, initially they were called Encore, and then they were called The Band, and now they're called 3MB. So it just seems like every week they just have something, a different name, because their gimmick is so unstable to me. I'm so not a fan of this 3MB gimmick. I like stables. Heel stable is okay, but I mean, you know, you got to give me something better than that. You got to give me something better than 3MB. I mean, especially since we saw the Nexus, you know, a couple of years ago, and to see such a intimidating group such as the Nexus, and then fast forward a couple of years, and now we see 3MB, yeah, that pretty much shows you how much of a decline their interest in heel stables are, because you're attacking Santino Marella and Zack Ryder just because. And yeah, to me, Drew McIntyre deserves much better than being Heath Slater's lackey. I mean, he was the one-man band, and now he's in a group called the three-man band. Yeah, that's not very creative at all. So I'm not a fan of it. And, you know, them as a stable, mid-card heels, I'm not sure about, you know, but them having that type of gimmick to them, that was just absolutely horrible. So, bad, bad, bad. Not a fan at all. Then we have Dolph Ziggler promo interrupted by David Otunga. AJ books a match with the two versus Ryback. I was actually pretty I was pretty impressed with this segment, actually. Dolph Ziggler's promo about being WWE and World Heavyweight Champion, that really didn't do anything to me. It just seemed like it was a waste of time for something to happen. So when David Otunga came out, I was a little shocked and wondering what they're doing. I was definitely hoping that they didn't, they weren't going to do anything. So, and just the match between the two would have been very weird. But Ryback comes out, and Dolph Ziggler saves face by leaving. David Otunga takes the fall. Yeah, it was a good way to build up Ryback's character even more, and it wasn't two jobbers. It was a kind of a jobber and the Money in the Bank winner. So it was a good two choices in my opinion. So kudos to the WWE for that. So let's see, what pay per view had the first Inferno match? I believe it was Unforgiven 98. Is that correct? Unforgiven of 1998. Kane and The Undertaker in the heat of their feud there. Next we have McMahon and Paul Heyman talk in McMahon's office. McMahon counters proposal of CM Punk asking McMahon to fight him. He was like, okay, and he tells him that he'll be willing to wrestle a match with Paul Heyman. I was like, okay, well, maybe Heyman and McMahon, gimmick match, but not, and then I said, oh, no, this Paul Heyman in the ring. If I'm not mistaken, he hasn't even been in the ring since. I know that he had a match against, was it Todd Gordon back in ECW when they were having their war about who controls the promotion. I know he had a, if I'm not mistaken, he had a match against Jim Cornette back in the WCW, which was a very odd match. So, that was very weird. So, I'm glad that didn't happen. So, let's see here. What DCW wrestler had his son involved in the storyline? What original ECW wrestler had his son involved in the storyline where the son idolized his enemy and rival? looks like another person in the chat room gave it away. It was Raven, but I'll let you know that I did know the answer. The rival was Tommy Dreamer. So, and they had a segment where the son did the whole spreading the arms thing, and long-term rival between Raven and Tommy Dreamer. So, so that was a pretty fun. I'm sorry, Sandman. Sandman and Tommy Dreamer. That's what it was. Fun. Very, very fun moment there. ECW moment there. I'm looking at the chat room. Sandman was the person. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. Tweet or chat room. The feud was Raven and Sandman, correct? I don't even know why I said Tommy Dreamer. Okay, so the son was the Sandman's son, and he was feuding against Raven. So that's my, I don't even, I was thinking of Raven and Tommy Dreamer. They had a feud, they had a long feud of, over Beulah, Beulah McGillicuddy. So, yeah. Beulah was the person, not the son. So, long time feud between Dreamer and Raven. But, yeah, Raven and Sandman was the correct answer for that. So, next we have AJ books a match between Matt Stryker and Kane. Backstage segment, Stryker wanted an apology. AJ as a general manager, she just has to go. I mean, I'm not a fan. It's just, it's dumbed down her character so much, and she needs to be in the Divas title picture. Let's think about this for a second. Well, before we even go to Eve and Layla. Okay, Layla lost the match. We need a top babyface for the Divas title. We have Eve, which is the heel right now. Natalya's a heel. Beth Phoenix is gone. And Caitlyn is green. But she's a face, but she's green. She's definitely not ready to be in the title contention. So, essentially, you have Eve, Natalya, Caitlyn, Layla, and Alicia Fox just kind of comes and goes when she pleases. So, how in the world are you going to have a successful Divas division with five Divas? I mean, beforehand, they used to have, you know, Diva Battle Royals, but now you have really like five Divas. I haven't seen Tamina Snuka in about 20 moons, 20 full moons, and I don't, I mean, I liked her a lot. I thought she had a great amount of potential to be a good star, especially when they made her a face, and she was emulating her dad, Jimmy Superfly Snuka, so. That's basically what we get for the Divas division. And Antonio Cesaro defeats Justin Gabriel. Good match. I was actually surprised that Gabriel had so much offense in the match. I was actually, I'll tell you what, Justin Gabriel, and he's like Tyson Kidd to me. He's, I mean, maybe it's the size thing that's not getting him over, but I like Justin Gabriel. He has a lot of potential. It's like Vince doesn't really like the smaller guys. I mean, you know, it seems like the cutoff point is like your Bret Harts, your Shawn Michaels, you know, people like that. It seems like that may be the cutoff point. But if you're about a $195, I mean, of course you got Rey Mysterio as an exception because he was around for so long. But, I mean, if you're a $195, you know, 5'10", 5'11", you're just a really glorified jobber. I mean, we've seen that many a time. So it's unfortunate. It's because I like Justin Gabriel. I don't see him as a world title contender anytime soon, although they could push him. But Tyson Kidd is definitely has a better chance to me because he, you know, because he came from the legendary Stu Hart dungeon. So, you know, hopefully they do something with Tyson Kidd. Leon, I don't see any tweets or I don't see tweets of trivia questions. Or I don't see any trivia questions on the on the chat room, so yeah, I'm ready to be quizzed more. I usually give the trivia questions every week, but feel free to send me trivia questions. quiz the host this week. We might have at least one of these a month, maybe even two. So, Kofi Kingston on Miz TV. I like what they're doing with Kofi. The only thing is, I'm not quite sure what I like. Kofi. Kofi's one of my favorite wrestlers in the WWE. He has a amazing amount of talent. The problem is, I don't know if he'll get back to the 2009 Kofi Kingston, where he was the sole survivor and defeated CM Punk and Randy Orton within seconds. Had that good feud with Randy Orton. Seems like Orton, you know, there was an incident where he didn't. I think he was supposed to be setting up for a punt, and it didn't work. He miscued, ended up RKOing him, and Randy Orton kept legitimately saying stupid to him. This happened in 2009 or early 2010. And then that just kind of just diffused or just kind of deflated deflated the push altogether. So I hope that, you know, watch the main event and you'll probably like what you see. But I really hope that they decide to push him more than just a mid-carder and have him become a world champion soon. I'm going to write an article soon about people I think should win the Royal Rumble, and just kind of give you a little spoiler here. He's definitely going to be one of them. We're going to bring our Raw correspondent in here, Derek. But beforehand, what role did Shane McMahon first play when he officially became a character on TV? Loving the questions. He was, it's kind of tricky because he was a referee at one point in time. But before then, he was kind of like an agent role. He even came out, I believe it was... I think it was 1990 or 1991 when Undertaker won his first world title, when Ric Flair came in and brought a chair out, and they tried to get Flair away from Hulk Hogan, and one of the people who escorted Ric Flair to the back was, I believe Shane McMahon was one of those people. So, but I know that he did referee for a second. This is in the early 90s, like 91, 92, something like that. So. So my answer would be either a referee or a security agent type of person, because he played both of those roles in the very early 90s. So that would be my answer. All right, Raw correspondent Derek, what do you have this week for us, sir?
Hey, well, I didn't get a chance to answer that question because I was on the phone. So, yeah. I won't give you props for that question. I knew the answer anyway, but...
was it referee?
Yeah, probably, but let's get to my point. Anyway, I watched Monday Night Raw. No one really adds that much excitement to it anymore. However, for me, I think Daniel Bryan, if I could watch him, I like him. He adds a lot of excitement to the show with his... He's a genius. He has one line, not even a line, it's what, one word. Yes, no, no, yes. It's the new catchphrase. He's caught on, so I hope a lot of luck to him. Especially when he hooks up with Kane. It's kind of corny, but it kind of brings the old classic, you know, 80s wrestling to Monday Night Raw. Monday Night Raw is not that great, so that adds a lot of character to it. It's always good to have JR there. JR is an awesome, he's the best in the world. Michael Cole, he's come a long way since I first saw him way back when. And he used to always want to, you know, beat up JR, what was it, a year or two ago, but now they're like best friends, so whatever. And Ryback versus Punk, that's going to be a great one. Now, Ryback's the new Goldberg, I guess. That's what they're trying to bill him to be. CM Punk's gross. I don't like Paul Heyman, never really did. And Cena kind of backed out really quick on that. He's like, yeah, let Ryback fight Punk. I've never seen Cena back down like that. I'm not a Cena fan. However, I do like his endorsing the pink, and that's really made me a Cena fan. But I thought he backed out of that really quick and just said, yeah, let's let these two fight, not me, see ya. Give me your thoughts. Bye.
Very, very good analysis there, Derek. We'll definitely get that to that when I get to the main event part. But I can definitely understand. I have my thoughts of why Cena backed out like that. But, I mean, you know, with Daniel Bryan, I mean, this guy, I mean, he has such an opportunity to be the top babyface. Again, the top, he was never really a top babyface, but he was kind of, he was still a face technically when he won the world title. He was kind of teasing the heel turn when he won the world title, but he was still a top face in that regard. But he has the opportunity to be the top guy in the WWE. He has such a crave. Such a craze going on now with the yes and the no's. It seems like the only thing that needs to happen is him just flip, you know, into a full-fledged face and just start saying yes. Because, I mean, just the crowd just drowns the arena with yes chants still. And it's still so... so overt, so, I mean, it's so deafening. And so we'll see. I definitely hope that he makes – I like right now that he's kind of like the tweener. But, you know, a full-fledged face turn by Daniel Bryan would definitely be a good idea in the coming future. I think I've shared with this before. I definitely hope that the end of the Daniel Bryan and Kane tag team doesn't culminate in some – you know, Kane turns heel or Daniel Bryan turns heel. They both have been heel within the past year, and, you know, we don't need that again. So both of them staying face would be a good idea. The Raw has a shortage of baby faces anyway, so both of them being face would be definitely a good idea. So looks like have no answer. I don't know if my answer is right. I don't know if it's right or wrong. So whoever wants to, whoever posed the question, probably wants to let me know if that's a right or wrong answer. And let's see, no trivia tweets yet. So feel free to tweet as well, or call in 347-884-8452. The tweet is at Crave Wrestling. If you want to tweet any trivia questions as well. Next, we have Sheamus versus Wade Barrett. They did it again. They did the match again for the second week in a row, and they said that it ended up in a disqualification last week, so we're going to do it again. I was wondering if it was going to be a clear cut winner. I'm glad that it wasn't, because it hurt both of them to me. Sheamus is about to, you know, defend his world title, so he doesn't, you know, any other time I wouldn't be opposed to Sheamus losing, because Sheamus hardly ever loses, so that wouldn't hurt him at all. And Wade Barrett definitely can't afford to lose right now, because looks like they're kind of stalling on his character. From what the vignettes and all the hype was before he got there. So I hope that they give us a little bit more Wade Barrett coming here soon as far as being a bigger star. But it seems like he's kind of drowning into the upper mid-card pool of heels You know, we see Damian Sandow. I mean, we see The Miz, Antonio Cesaro, Cody Rhodes to an extent. So, you know, he's still kind of in that pool. And maybe he'll be next in line for World Heavyweight Championship feud. I surely hope so. He loses DQ. Wade Barrett loses by DQ. Because the Big Show interfered by pulling the ropes down, and Sheamus falls out of the ring. So I'll admit it. The feud between Sheamus and Big Show, you know, I don't endorse it per se, but I think that they're doing a decent job with the build. So I definitely would give them credit for the build. Next, we have Cena McMahon talking McMahon's office. Edge, Eve defeated Layla. Nothing much there. That's something I really don't. Layla had her foot on the ropes before the three count. So thought we saw that at SummerSlam with Alberto Del Rio. But okay, maybe it's a rib on the instant replay thing from the NFL. Still, that happened like almost a month ago, but, you know, just the whole foot on the ropes and the referee doesn't catch it, that's getting a little bit stale to me. Next, we have a Kane and Daniel Bryan backstage segment. Those are always funny. Kane's, you know, he has the mask, which is good, and you know, he is definitely very, his character alone is very oxymoronic, which is very fun. It's very innovative. It's creative, and I like it. McMahon tells to Ryback in office. Then, you know, Ryback's response was, "Feed me, Punk." So, yeah, that was basically his promo. And apparently that's all he has to say. So, question in the chat room here. Whose tagline was, "If I can be serious for a moment"? I think that's quite easy there. It's Lance Storm. So, "If I can be serious for a moment." I'm from Calgary, Alberta, Canada. Next we have 3MB crashes a local bar and gets kicked out. Cheesy. Team Road Scholars defeats Primo and Epico. I guess they still trying to keep the tag team division afloat. So I guess it's not a bad decision to have a random tag team match like that. Kofi defeats Miz. I like this win. It's a good build for Kofi. Tell you what, very, very, very nicely executed, and probably wasn't supposed to go that way. Trouble in Paradise. I mean, whoa. He legitimately busted open Miz, and there was actually some fear of a concussion, which he was actually cleared. The test proved negative. But, wow. I mean, if people didn't think that Trouble in Paradise finisher was good enough for Kofi Kingston, think again. Because that, oh, man, that execution was plush. And just, I mean, you can see how much of the effect that it had on the Miz. It seemed like he was just lights out for a second. So I have a whole new found respect for the Trouble in Paradise finisher. Kudos to Kofi Kingston for using that, because that is a lot more potent than I thought it was. Then we see the contract signing. CM Punk cuts a promo. And then, as Derek was saying, our Raw correspondent, John Cena cuts a promo. And he just kind of like does, you know, he kind of says, talks about, he doesn't seem like he even cares about the World Heavyweight title. He just wanted to whoop his butt. And so then he goes out, the crowd and starts to feed me more chant, and he didn't even say, like, choose Ryback. He just kind of start chanting to feed me more, and Ryback signs the contract. So it was a little bit odd to me. He did back out real fast, and then the ending was good. We saw a shell shock finisher, and, you know, it was good. There's a lot of criticism that I've seen with articles and responses to articles that's been written on Bleacher Report and other sites over the past day. But, you know, I think it's a good idea. I like it. I think it's a good twist. We don't have to see Ryback for, you know, a considerable amount of time. Like I said before, the WWE has pigeonholed themselves when it comes to the WWE title picture, because, you know, we're not going to see Ryback rock. I mean, Ryback is grooming himself as a top face right now. If he makes that heel turn and switches like that, feuding against The Rock, no, that's not going to draw real well. So Ryback and Punk, if Ryback wins, you know, it'll be November. I'm sorry, it'll be October. Maybe he loses it to CM Punk or maybe a triple threat match next month at Survivor Series between the three. You know, hey, if you want to use Ryback as a transitional champion for a month, I still don't think he's ready, but, you know, it'll be a good twist. It'll be a good addition to the world title picture, because CM Punk and John Cena, it's just not cutting it for me. We've seen it so many times, and it's just month after month after month, and I like the Ryback addition. So I'm more excited for the Hell in a Cell match between Ryback and Punk than I am Cena and Punk, because I know that's just going to be another Cena-Punk match with another stipulation. But as heavy as Ryback is getting pushed, it's really difficult for me to see him lose that match. So if they do decide to have Ryback lose, it'll be interesting to see if it's clean or not. CM Punk doesn't need any extra, you know, merit badges or anything, he doesn't need more, you know, chinks in his armor. But, you know, it doesn't really do anything to see another Cena and Punk match. At least until leading up to Royal Rumble. So, question: who did Macho Man defeat to wrestle in the main event at WrestleMania 4? I believe the WrestleMania 4 was the tournament, and I believe he beat DiBiase in the tournament. I know he beat the One Man Gang in one of the matches, if I'm not mistaken. I believe another person that he beat was Hacksaw Butch Reed. So those are my answers. One Man Gang and Hacksaw Butch Reed. Maybe incorrect, but I'm almost positive that it was the One Man Gang and Hacksaw Butch Reed. All right, let's go on to SmackDown. Just a little recap of SmackDown here. KO Punch versus Bro Kick, scientific little thing that they had. Sheamus's force was... yes, that is my final answer. Sheamus's force was 1322. Big Show's was 1809. Sheamus attacked by Tensai after Brodus after Big Show leaves. Sheamus versus Tensai. Sheamus defeats Tensai. Tensai is just another you know, I guess he's just a sacrificial lamb to the main eventers now. Alberto Del Rio and Ricardo Rodriguez talk backstage. Ricardo Rodriguez Santino backstage segment. Slater and Mahal defeat Santino and Ryder. Kane defeats Dolph Ziggler by disqualification. Kane and Daniel Bryan argue. Striker tries to interview but gets a no-lock and a choke slam. Ricardo Rodriguez tries to find Orton Steele but comes across Hornswoggle. Big Show defeats Kofi Kingston. Daniel Bryan and Alberto Del Rio backstage segment. Booker T, Teddy Long, and Caitlin, and Layla and Eve, they all talk about who attacked Caitlin. Sin Cara defeats Damian Sandow. Alberto Del Rio defeats Daniel Bryan. Cuts a promo afterwards, and Orton comes out and attacks Alberto Del Rio, and RKO's Ricardo Rodriguez on the announcer's table. Yeah, you know, pretty simple. Pretty simple show with SmackDown. Wasn't the most exciting. But you know, SmackDown hasn't been exciting. Really at all. So, got another question here. Who trained Ron Simmons? That would be Hiro Matsuda. Hiro Matsuda trained Ron Simmons. We'll go to Impact Wrestling leading into Bound for Glory. First, we on Impact Wrestling, we had Aries defeating Storm, Angle and Briscoe and AJ backstage segment, Hogan and Sting in ring promo, interrupted by Daniels and Kazarian, then Bully Ray. Hogan books Daniels and Kazarian versus Sting and Bully Ray. Hernandez defeats AJ Styles. Aces and Nates promo in the clubhouse. We see a Zeman Ion promo interrupted by RVD. I wish that they would have built this a little bit more. I'm glad to see RVD back in some type of title hunt. You know, the X Division title, I thought it had a 225-pound limit. I definitely think that I definitely think that the whole RVD TV title thing that he did in ECW was really cool. Kind of made the second tier title relevant, and I like you know, the 225 thing. I like because it is kind of like a cruiserweight title. Or maybe it can be like a 230, 235. It could be kind of like a junior heavyweight type of deal. But it seems like that's been thrown out the window because RVD's at least a good 245. So looks like that was thrown out the window. Initially, it was for like the cruiserweights or like the light heavyweights. And then Samoa Joe came around, and he was around 280, and he just kind of dominated the X Division for a while, and they kind of was a little looser with it, but Hulk Hogan didn't make an announcement about it going, reinforcing the 225 limit, but if you saw Bound for Glory, it didn't look like that is the case anymore. Hogan, Sting, Bully Ray talking office. Brooke Hogan and Tara backstage segment. Daniels and Kazarian defeats Sting and Bully Ray. Bully Ray power bombs Daniels from second rope through a table, so they lost by disqualification. Samoa Joe and Magnus backstage segment. I like this feud. I like Magnus a lot, actually. He's actually one of my favorite people in TNA. He has a very good future. He's only 25 years old, so he has a heck of a future ahead of him. Miz Tessmacher defeats Gail Kim, who was actually voted 2012 Wrestler of the Year. I don't remember what source that's from or what company that's from, but It was a recent report that she was voted 2012 Wrestler of the Year, which is pretty interesting. Post-match attack by Tara, but Tessmacher gets the upper hand. Bobby Roode in the locker room cuts an interview interrupted by James Storm. They begin fighting. Then King Mo breaks it up. Have no idea why King Mo is affiliated with TNA. And there were some reports initially that he was actually being trained to compete in a wrestling match. And whoa, I mean, he just seems like a deer in headlights every time he's out there. Just like a little kid in his first day of school in the first grade. He just has no idea what he's doing. He just has no clue where he's at. You know, decent MMA star, but the wrestling world is a whole different ball game, Doc. So we'll see how far that goes. You know, wish him the best, but you know, he's definitely got a lot of growing to do with if he wants to stick in the wrestling world. Jeff Hardy defeats Bobby Roode by disqualification. We see a post-match promo and attack by Austin Aries. I'm not liking the heel. I'm not liking how they're making him a heel again. It just seems like he's kind of redundant now. Just him as a heel is just not really cutting it for me. When he was one of those characters that eventually became a babyface because his character was so catchy and he was being cheered so much that they turned him into a face. That was a good idea, but you know, they want to appease Jeff Hardy because his contract's ending, and you know, I don't know if that's really the best idea to do that, because you know, Austin Aries is a heel. We've seen it. He's been a heel for the majority of his career, so making him a face was a good idea. Him as a heel now just really doesn't cut it for me. All right, on to Bound for Glory. All right, here we go. RVD defeats Zema Ion. He becomes new X Division champion. Good idea. It was a good match. I think it was a little less than 9 minutes. Good idea. I mean, like I said before, I like the fact that there are Zema Ion, you know, I liked his character at first, but he's got some growing to do as far as making the X Division, you know, worthwhile as far as intrigue is concerned. RVD would be a good person to revive the X Division, so I'm a fan of him being X Division champ. Samoa Joe defeats Magnus, retains the TV title, decent match. James Storm defeats Bobby Roode. Man, this was, in my opinion, hands down the match of the night. I mean, talk about your crimson mask, you know, your proverbial crimson mask, as JR would say, and Gordon Solie back in the day. Crimson mask, wow. That match was phenomenal. I mean, even This Is Awesome chants from the crowd. Nice spear by Roode onto the table. Thumbtacks were involved. It was one heck of a match. Honestly, to me, and there was, you know, other people believe the same from what I've seen. This should have been the main event. I mean, the match should have been for the world title anyways because of the build that they had. I thought that when James Storm left shortly after lockdown, he was going to win the Bound for Glory series and finally become champ again, because he only had like a week or two reign beforehand. So yeah, I mean, you know, it's interesting to see that, but you know, I was a fan of Austin Aries winning anyways. I actually thought that Austin Aries was going to drop the title before Bound for Glory and be more involved in the Aces and Eights feud, and then James Storm was going to win the Bound for Glory series, but didn't see that. So we'll see where this goes. As far, it seemed like it's a culmination of the feuds, because it's been a long feud, but it's been a really good feud though. So kudos to that match. The match was great. Then we saw Joey Ryan defeat Al Snow. Now, it seemed like it was a work from the beginning, from the whole gut check thing. Either it was a work from the beginning, or the whole 87% thing was true, and they wanted to keep Joey Ryan because he got a lot of support, and, you know, he didn't really do much for me. I'll follow Joey Ryan for a while now. He was in Wrestling Society X, and he was also in Championship Wrestling from Hollywood, or NWA Hollywood. He was also in Ring of Honor for a while as well. So I've been following Joey Ryan for a few years now, probably five or so. So, you know, he's a decent addition to the roster. I think that the best place to put Joey Ryan now would be to feud with RVD for the X Division title. We won head chance. You still got a chance for Al Snow. So, you know, it was good to see Al Snow back in the ring. I'm a fan. So kudos to that. So, what year did Bruno Sammartino win his first WWF title? I believe it was kind of like a Big Show, Daniel Bryan type of thing. Big Show lost to Daniel Bryan in 45 seconds. I think it was like something around there. He lost. He beats Nature Boy Buddy Rogers back in 1963. There you go. Then we saw Matt Morgan interfering in Carbon Footprint's Al Snow. How about that? So kudos to Matt Morgan. Looks like he's on his heel turn now and anti-establishment. I kind of like him as a face, and I think that he had an opportunity to become champion. I think they had a good chance of reviving him or making him relevant as a top face, but they never really gave him that opportunity all the way. He came close a few times. But, you know, I don't really see him doing much as a heel either. So we'll see. We'll see how far that goes. Next, we had Chavo Guerrero and Hernandez defeating AJ Styles and Angle and Daniels and Kazarian to become new tag team champions. Now, Chavo has been getting booed lately. It seems like he was getting cheered when he first came, and eventually people just got bored of Chavo Guerrero, honestly, me included. But I'm trying to hold on to Chavo Guerrero, but he's just lost a step to me. He's still not a bad wrestler, but he's just kind of lost a step to me. So him and Hernandez, I'm not sure about that team. But it seems like they signed a nice – it seemed like there was probably an incentive for Chavo Guerrero's contract for him to win some title or something like that. So, I mean, I like Hernandez. I've liked Hernandez for quite some time now. But just the Chavo and Hernandez team, I don't know. I mean, I think Chavo should stay babyface because him as a heel was just kind of annoying, and he eventually ends up jobbing all the time anyway. So at least he's winning matches as a face. Next we have one interesting thing that I want to say is that it looks like we're going to see an Angle on Wes Briscoe feud soon, because they just randomly show Wes Briscoe when either with Kurt Angle or when Angle comes out. They show Wes Briscoe cheering for Angle when he came out, so which I would like. I like Wes Briscoe, like I said before. I mean, I think it's pretty apparent that he's one of the Aces and Eights members, based on just one of them very, very, I mean, it's a clear-cut resemblance of Wes Briscoe. So we'll see if he gets unveiled. We'll get to the whole unveiling of Aces and Eights here soon. Tara defeats Miss Testmacher. This actually was a bit of a surprise to me because it seems like Tara has had the upper hand the past few weeks. One of the weeks, Miss Testmacher defeated her, but seems like she's had the upper hand recently. But you know, it's a resurgence for Tara's career. I'm cool with it. I'm cool that. That she's a champ now. She deserves it. She's been around for a while, and I'm okay with it. She cuts a promo afterwards and brings out her Hollywood boyfriend, Jesse. We get Who Are You chants. So nobody really cares about this Hollywood boyfriend. See a recap of Sting's Hall of Fame induction. Okay, so here's the thing. There were some reports that Ric Flair declined to show up to the Hall of Fame induction. TNA offered him, you know, an invitation, and he declined. I know that he's not on good terms with TNA, but I mean, this is Sting. I mean, this is one of his greatest rivalries ever, and I'm not a fan of him refusing. I mean, if the reports are legit, him declining to come to Sting's TNA Hall of Fame induction is just ridiculous to me. Now, I know that he'll probably come to if Sting was inducted in the WWE Hall of Fame, I'm sure that he'll come there. But, I mean, come on, Flair. I mean, you know, if the reports are true, I don't think that was a classy move. But refusing to come to Sting's Hall of Fame ceremony for the sake of TNA, so... You know, I don't know. You know, it's just reports that we get, but I'm not feeling it if it is true. Aces and Eights defeats Hogan and Sting. Now, the victory road. The turning point pay-per-view poster and the video promo. They were plugging Aces and Eights, so it was pretty much a spoiler from the first place. Now, so I had a. You know, since they did all the promos beforehand, which wasn't the smartest thing to do, you basically spoiled us and told us that we'll see more of Aces and Eights. Okay, I understand. I like the feud in the beginning. It feels like it's drawn out now because, like I said, they should have revealed the person beforehand. Now, other Aces and Eights comes out to... Well, first of all, we start off with Joseph Park... breaking the chain off and of the rail. I thought he was the weaker version of Abyss. So I don't understand that. Although he has been playing the Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde type of character, I don't know if that's going to eventually, you know, become full fledged Abyss. But when he was shooting with Bully Ray, they made it to be two people. So we'll see where that goes. Okay, so he breaks the chain off the rail he was bound to. He attacks the other Aces and Eight member up the ramp or down or across the ramp because the ramp was lateral. Other Aces and Eights members come out to attack, and then Hogan comes out and cleans house. And then Hogan hawks up on one of them in the ring. And they do the big reveal. Now, I'm sitting here saying, okay, come on, just don't fail me. You know, make this good, make this worth the 4 months that they've been building it. You take off the mask, and it's D-Von. Come on, D-Von? I mean, what in the world was that all about? That was just, I mean, now don't get me wrong. I like D-Von. You know, I'm happy that he had a little resurgence as a singles competitor. I was okay with him as TV champ, but he's not. I mean, you never groomed him to be a top guy. You know, for years he was a tag team wrestler. Yet you you did something good with Bully Ray because you groomed him to be a top guy. You groomed him to be a really, really good heel. The whole Bully Ray, the whole do you know who I am, the whole Twitter machine, all of that. One of the best heels in wrestling today. He kind of makes a babyface turn, which I think is a little premature. And then I'm thinking that he's going to turn against Sting. I thought the writing was on Raw with that, which I'd have been okay with him being a member of Aces and Eights. But you give me D-Von? I think that that was a horrible idea. For him to be, not necessarily to be a member of Aces and Eights, but for him to be the person who was unveiled, I think that that was a really, really bad idea. I mean, you could have gave me Jeff Jarrett, which I would have been way more okay with. I'm not the biggest Jeff Jarrett fan in the world. He's a nice guy. I met him here while I stay on a whim. I was driving to get some gas, and he was doing some traveling from, I think he said it was coming from, I think he was coming from somewhere in the South, like Tennessee, and then he had a show up Midwest, and he just pulled up and pulled in my city and got some gas, and I said, I was pumping some gas too. It was just me, and I said, oh, wow, it looks like Jeff Jarrett. And I saw Karen Jarrett go inside. It was like a speedway. And it was very, very interesting. And he's a real go-to guy. I mean, he's a real cool guy. I talked to him, and he was definitely willing to sit down and chat with me while we were pumping gas, and we took a picture together. He's just a real classy guy. So as a person, I respect Jeff Jarrett because he didn't have to do that. He could have been a jerk and, you know, thought that I was some type of fan or something like that. But we actually chatting at the gas station. So, and I took a picture. So it was cool, you know. So kudos to Jeff Jarrett for that. But, you know, as a wrestler, never been the biggest fan of Jeff Jarrett. He had his moments in the WCW and the resurgence of the NWO. So, you know, kudos to that moment, but just you know, in TNA, you know, is his company. Him and his dad founded it, so he pulled a Vern Gagne on us and was champ for so long, you know, because he was felt, you know, the company should fall on his hands if it falls. So you know, after a while, it became kind of stale. But I think kind of stepping back and letting other people take the reign is a good idea, especially homegrown talent like Bobby Roode, like James Storm. So, you know, I think that was a good idea for that. So if he would have been the person who was unveiled, I think that that would have been a good idea. I think that if Garrett Bischoff even was the person who was unveiled, that would have been a better idea than D-Von. I mean, yeah, just didn't work out for me. I definitely didn't want to see D-Von as the grand person at their WrestleMania style pay-per-view, Bound for Glory, the pay-per-view of the year for TNA wrestling, and you give me D-Von. So now, if he would have been unveiled on an Impact or something like that, I'd be perfectly fine with that. But D-Von at Bound for Glory, not good at all. The crowd wasn't in it either. I mean, it was just like silence, and then all of a sudden we heard "This Is Awkward" chants, which I definitely was understanding and agreeing with that as well. Jeff Hardy defeats Austin Aries and become new TNA champion. Debuted some odd music and had some weird mask coming out. Hardy gets a ton of heat in Phoenix. That was, I don't know why, but he got a ton of heat. I was very, very surprised about that. So Austin Aries was the babyface in Phoenix. So wasn't expecting that necessarily from the Phoenix crowd. So I don't necessarily know if if that was I mean, Hardy kind of played to it and did kind of mock the crowd a little bit, you know, which I mean, in those situations, you just got to do something, you know. I'm sure that sometimes that heat feels good as far as a wrestler is concerned, so you kind of got to play into it. I don't think it's going to transcend into Orlando when I go back to the Impact Wrestling arena. So, you know, we'll see where that goes. I think it's a good business decision to make Hardy champion. Yeah, I mean, you know, I really don't have anything bad to say about that. It was a good match. And having a, you know, trying to re-sign him, and, you know, he's more over than Austin Aries. And, you know, it was a tough climb. He won the title back 2 years ago at Bound for Glory, kept it for a second. And, of course, we know about the whole incident that happened before, where he came, you know, he had a match against Sting, and he was not on, he was not level-headed, I'll say that much. So, you know, so he, you know, he apparently, from what it looks like, he became clean, and, you know, he had a road to, you know, of course he had to claw and scratch his way back up to the top. And, you know, this is a good culmination of, you know, another chance that he got. So, you know, kudos to Jeff Hardy for that. I'm okay with him being champ. Real quick, Ring of Honor, you know, just nothing much there. Feel free to ask me another trivia question. We got a little bit of time left. So, Mike Bennett goes against David Richards. David Richards beats Mike Bennett. Jay Lethal defeats QT Marshall. Loving Jay Lethal. The iPay-per-view too, I believe he defeats Davey Richard by like some submission and referee stoppage. So I'm loving the aggression that they're giving Jay Lethal. I mean, he stays babyface, and I like it. I think it's a good idea to make him kind of like a mean, aggressive babyface. I like it. And then Kevin Steen defeats Red Titus. So, you know, decent show as we see every week. Not much to say, but we'll see where that goes. Last segment here, flavor of the week. Four of the worst King of the Ring winners of all time. Now, if anybody wants to tweet their worst King of the Ring winner, or call in, or put it in the chat room, feel free to do that. Let's start off by saying the 2008 King of the Ring, and that person was William Regal. Now, William Regal, I really, really like William Regal. Okay, so he is a really, really good agent. He's a good commentator. He's a heck of a wrestler. Just a real legit fighter, you know. But you know, we'll see what that with William Regal. It was just really odd to me, because they were trying to really give him some type of last minute push, and you know, it was kind of they tried to have a last ditch effort of making him some type of relevant character. And around that time, they made him King of the Ring. I believe Triple H was the champion at that time. And from what I remember, they were actually going to start a feud with William Regal and Triple H. I think he had some type of substance abuse around that time that just really stopped the whole thing. So, yeah, it was quite interesting. The people he defeated was Hornswoggle, Finley, and CM Punk. And Chris Jericho was in that King of the Ring, too. Chris Jericho should have won that King of the Ring, because I would have definitely rather see Chris Jericho and Triple H fight for the world title. But they were really, yeah, I mean, they were really trying to do something with William Regal at the time. So compared to all of the other King of the Ring winners, the bottom four, William Regal. Now, if he won the King of the Ring to, you know, maybe earlier in his career, or if, you know, if he could have done a little bit more with his win, which he didn't do anything with the win because of the substance abuse policy violation that he had. So, you know, unfortunately, I gotta put William Regal on the list. Let's go to the 1998 King of the Ring winner. And that was Ken Shamrock. Yeah, I mean, you know, he was just a mid-card at best. They tried to, you know, they tried a couple of times, you know, to make him a star, but no, it just was not a good idea at all to make him a star. What color were the ring ropes at WrestleMania 9? Caesar's Palace. I believe it was like black and gold or something like that. So, what WWE superstar once wore boots that had a popular symbol in them in tribute to the Legend of Zelda video game series? I think that was Cody Rhodes. I'm not sure, but I think that was Cody Rhodes, if I'm not mistaken. But Ken Shamrock, he beats Kama, Mark Henry, Jeff Jarrett, and The Rock in 1998 King of the Ring. So, yeah, Ken Shamrock didn't do much with that at all. Then we'll go to the 1999 King of the Ring. Thank you. That was the correct answer. Cool. Billy Gunn was the 1999 King of the Ring winner. He beats Viscera, Ken Shamrock, Kane, and X-Pac. They really, I remember this very, very well. I mean, they really tried to make Billy Gunn a star because he was shooting with The Rock at the time, too. Had a higher scale pay-per-view match with him, too. Feuding with, if I'm not mistaken, was feuding with Mankind, too, for a second. They really wanted to make him a star. But, you know, I like Billy Gunn, too. But they just really didn't do much with him. They tried, but they just pulled the plug. I don't know if he wasn't getting over enough. But he seemed like he was just kind of a consistent, you know, when he was with DX, not with the Smoking Guns, but when he was with, and not Rockabilly either, when he was a Honky Tonk Man, that was horrible. But his DX days, he was consistently over, so making him a heel at the time and deciding to push him didn't really go far at all. And then finally, the 1995 King of the Ring, Mabel. He defeats Adam Bomb in like seconds, The Undertaker, and in the finals, the 1995 finals, was a match between Mabel and Savio Vega. Yeah. 1995, King of the Ring, just bad, bad, bad. And so, yeah, The Undertaker was in that King of the Ring, too. And just, you know, of course, the feud that Mabel and Undertaker had, when Undertaker had to wear the gray mask because his face was, quote-unquote, smashed because of a leg drop that King Mabel, when he turned heel, and it was just weird. It was just really, really weird. So, yeah, it was just really weird. So Mabel, to me, was the worst King of the Ring winner of all times. So there you go. Great show. Had a lot of fun. I'll go back to the trivia next week. Looks like as many tweets as we get every week, no one had any questions to pose. Thanks for the what color were the ring ropes? Were black and gold, Caesar's Palace. And so basically, thank you so much, chat room, for that was a lot of fun. I hope that I showed you my wrestling expertise and my love for wrestling for a few decades here. So thank you so much. We will continue to have trivia next week, but y'all will be the people who tweet and the people who are in the chat room and the people who are listening. You would be in the hot seat again. Question was, wasn't it purple? I thought it was gold and black and gold. I don't know. I might be incorrect, but if I'm not mistaken, it was black and gold. Might have been gold and purple, but it seemed like it was black and gold. We may get that there. I'm almost positive it was black and gold, but we shall see. I might have to look into that and see what color it is. If anybody wants to quickly tweet that or say that in the chat room, but I'm almost positive it was black and gold. So, cool. Awesome show. Had a lot of fun. Tweet at Crave Wrestling. Send your emails if you have any flavor of the week suggestions. Send them to cravewrestling@gmail.com. Go to Crave Wrestling's Facebook page and like Crave Wrestling. Check me out on Bleacher Report. Chris Featherstone, articles on Bleacher Report. And we'll be here next Tuesday. 347-884-8452 is the number to put in your back pocket. Flavor of the week next week. We're going to talk about matches where the biggest no sell matches. So basically, matches where people did not do any good selling, the match where one or the two people either missed a lot of cues or just didn't really execute their selling really well. So we'll talk about that next week. It should be pretty fun. One of the matches that I'm going to talk about is Brock Lesnar versus Goldberg, 2004. Their last match at WrestleMania, and in 2004, that was one of the worst no sell matches that I've seen in recent history. So it's gonna be fun. Jake Roberts and against JT Lightning was another one. Jake Roberts was apparently inebriated, and it was a sad deal for Jake Roberts, but that definitely falls in that category. So we're going to have a lot of fun talking about that next week. Biggest no-sell matches in wrestling. So thanks so much for being here. Thanks so much for listening. We just get our listening grows just so much, and it's the number is very humbling. Thanks so much for all the listeners that's and continue to spread the word about Crave Wrestling. Continue to spread the word about Pancakes and Power Slams. Let's get 2,000 Twitter followers. If you're listening to the show, go to @CraveWrestling. Follow @CraveWrestling on Twitter. Go to Crave Wrestling's Facebook page. Trivia, articles, latest news. It'll be there for you. Thanks so much. Until then, until next week, have a good week. Enjoy your wrestling, and God bless. Goodbye.